Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, the big L.A., welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Health Star Worldwide Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty. It is nasty. Hey, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my co-host, Adrienne Gruberg, founder of the Caregiver Space with over 120 caregivers following her. What an amazing woman. One day when I grow up, I'm going to be just like her. Now, our guest today is Crystal Meisner, a family caregiver to her son, who's an expert. That is, Crystal is the expert. And she has much personal experience on this topic, and we'll be finding out what that experience is. And basically, we're going to be discussing when and how you should consider a professional caregiver. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this interview. If you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners every single week, so I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh yeah, I forgot. They're also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. You know anybody like that? Folks, come on. Learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's, you know, an emergency, unlikely emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. That's a lot of any's in there. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. You know, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, you can't go over it, you can't go under it. You gotta go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're kind of stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast and my books and my videos and my blog. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's actually all about you. So go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and take our short quiz that will assess if you are a candidate for burnout. Just for doing that, I'm going to email you my very first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, absolutely free. And at the end of the show, we're going to let you know how you can get a hold of Adrienne as well. Hey, I want to take this moment and thank my last week's special guest. It was Daryl Gurney and his partner, Alexandra. And their show is, like all the others, recorded podcasts. You can hear them on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And this one as well will be there. So that's what that's all about. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guests and my co-host, Adrienne. Adrian, are you there?
I am, and I have 120,000 followers.
What did I say?
Not 120.
How did I miss that thousand part?
That's the most impressive part. I know.
Thank you for correcting that. You know, sometimes I'm not responsible. Sometimes I'm just not responsible what comes out of my mouth. Happens about when I turned 50. And yeah. Crystal, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me okay?
I am certainly so happy when everyone is where they're supposed to be. Well, Crystal, thank you again for agreeing to come on the show, and I really appreciate it. Why don't you take a minute or two and just begin by telling us a little bit about yourself. Just who is Crystal Meisner, and why should we be listening to you? No, forget about that.
Well, Crystal Meisner is a parent of a developmentally delayed young man. My son is Down syndrome, and he's going to be 33 in 2 weeks. Oh, no, that's a week away now. So I've had a rather extensive time of dealing with the issues that were required in taking care of him from birth.
Wow. I know someone just like you. You deserve many crowns. That is not easy.
Well, I've also been heavily involved with Special Olympics over the years as both a parent and a coach.
Mm.
And so I have, you know, the experience of dealing with athletes and other caregivers and the situations that they've dealt with. And then within my immediate friends and family, I had a brother whose wife died of cancer and what he went through when he was trying to take care of her. My stepbrother and sister-in-law also have a developmentally delayed daughter and the issues they've dealt with. My best friend and her brother are currently dealing with caregiving for their mother. My mom's best friend who passed away a few months ago and the issues we went through trying to deal with what she was trying to handle with a sudden illness and a sudden hospitalization and not being able to go back home. And then various friends and acquaintances over the years that have been dealing with, you know, family members and what their siblings and other family members say and how they're dealing with the issues and all that kind of thing. So I have a kind of a broad scope of information that I've garnered over the years.
Wow. And that's very fun dealing with the Special Olympics and stuff like that. So what we're talking about today is I'm sure there was a point in time where you had to deal with the emotions, you know, attached to feeling like, you know, giving up or you can't handle it or you need more help. There's just a whole plethora of issues that go on with that. And I'll have Adrian comment after you about what she went through because she was in a similar position. But go ahead and just tell me about the emotions attached to feeling like you were giving up.
Well, to preface that, there was a point about 5 years ago where I had to place my son in a care home. And it was an extraordinarily difficult decision to make. But we were at a point where the stress level on me was so great that I was becoming non-functional. And my health was deteriorating. And I knew that I could not give him my best because I no longer had my best. And as tough as it was on me emotionally, as tough as it was on him emotionally, it was the thing that I had to choose to do to rectify both of our situations.
Wow.
And I would say there's not a day that goes by where I didn't regret having to do it, you know, because the emotional pull is that strong on that criteria. But on the other hand, I know that it allowed me to heal and allowed me to regain my health and my sanity so that I can then turn around and give back to him again. And because, frankly, if I hadn't have placed him at the time that I did, I would not be talking to you now because I would have died in the process.
Yeah, well, you obviously did the right thing, but what almost caused you to not do it and to commit suicide, so to speak, by listening to those voices in your head that you shouldn't have listened to?
Well, it wasn't committing suicide. It was that my health was deteriorating to such a point that if I hadn't have separated myself from the situation to realize that I needed to take care of myself, I would have died. My health
Wow.
was heading that far downhill that fast. And I actually nearly did. I came real close to it.
Well, you'd
be
surprised how many people
recover.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but you'd be surprised how many
Okay.
caregivers get to that point that you were, and they keep going. I mean, you
Right.
had the common sense to, you know, listen to the symptoms and listen to the right voices, but not everyone does that. Adrian, any comments?
And that,
I'll go ahead and finish your thought first.
I was going to say, yeah, and that's
yes.
that's definitely something that I've seen a lot of people deal with, is that decision of, you know, or that thought that I have to keep doing it myself. I have to keep doing it myself. And you have to come to a realization at some point in time that if you burn out totally, you are no good to the person you're giving care to.
That's
and
right,
that's
just like
the
person
biggest
on the plane.
Criteria.
Yep.
Yeah.
Adrian?
Yeah, well, this is also the aspect that the person that you're caring for doesn't want anyone else to take care of them. They want you. There's a comfort level. So there's
mm-hmm.
that aspect that has to be dealt with. I know that I started taking care of my husband when he was diagnosed with cancer in 2005. And it wasn't at a point where it was bad. A couple of years later, when his mother was diagnosed with lymphoma and came to live with us, she was 89, and I became her caregiver, and Steve's condition worsened. And eventually taking care of the two of them became too much for me, despite the fact that they didn't want anyone else taking care of them. And it wasn't so much the medical treatment. They did not need medical treatment. They just needed someone there to do things for them. So you get to the point where you're resentful and all of that starts to wear on you too. So psychologically as well as physically, you're a mess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the magic point where you just can determine the difference between just being overly stressed and you just need some rest, you just need to fix it, or no, I need some help, and maybe I need to pay for this help. How do you know if you're there?
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, what are you, where are you at? You need to sit and basically take stock of yourself. It's like, what are you doing with your time? Is all your time spent taking care of this person? How is your health situation realistically? Because if you're falling apart, you're not going to be able to recover. What are you doing in your daily activities? Are you being able to accomplish the normal stuff that you would do during the course of a day? I mean, are you able to clean? Are you able to pay the bills? Are you able to go shopping? Are you getting sleep? You know, the bottom line is if you are so stretched thin that you become non-functional, then you need to get some help. And if you can't get a family member to come in and give you some respite time, then you want to look at getting some professional help. And that professional help could be one day a week. It could be 2 or 3 days a week. It doesn't have to be full-time care. It just has to be enough to allow you to recharge. And there's no saying that you can't be present when that care is happening.
Yeah.
You know, like Adrian was talking about, her husband wanted her to be caring for her, but, you know, she needed help. So she could bring in somebody that could deal with the household while she was doing the care with him. Or conversely, somebody to deal with him while she was dealing with household issues, just to release that level of stress on a regular basis. And, you know, that's crucial to have that respite opportunity.
And it's not necessarily someone that you need to pay, because there's a whole bunch of opportunities of volunteers, you know, through your families and friends, people who wouldn't mind doing something, you know, like, hey, while you're at the grocery store, would you mind picking up a few vegetables for me? That would save me a trip. Or, you know, it could be as simple as that, right?
Right. Yeah, the biggest thing is to not be afraid to talk about your situation with the people around you. You know, tell your friends, hey, if you can help me out in this respect, I would truly appreciate it. If family members are, you know, nitpicking at you in any way, shape, or form, say, hey, instead of complaining about the situation, do something to help, you know, be a little proactive here.
And be specific. You know, don't just be general. Let them know exactly what they can do, you know.
Right. Right. You know, say, hey, you know, it would be a huge help to me if you could come one day a month and just, you know, be with your mom or your dad and give me some time to take care of my personal needs. You know, and if you've got multiple kids and they could all do that, then you do get a few days. You know, but I went through years where, you know, I was a single parent and my mom and stepdad both worked full time and they had other outside activities and I had no support whatsoever. And, you know, that was part of what ground me down. And it finally got to a point where, you know, I did what I had to do. And it was, like I said, as much as it hurt to do it, I can't tell you how many people have actually told me that they admire me for making that decision, because they saw how worn down and how beat up I was, and they've seen how I've been able to recover and get back to the person that they used to know. And by them seeing that change in me, they know that I'm in a better position and I can therefore now do more.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're up on a break. Don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll continue talking to Adrian Gruberg and Crystal Meisner. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, David Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to onearmoneleg100words.com. That's onearmoneleg100words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back with Crystal Meisner and Adrian Gruberg, my co-host. Are you girls still there?
Here, here.
Oh, I love it. I love it when they're there. Listen, Adrian, any comments on what Crystal just shared as far as...
Yeah. The one thing I feel caregivers need to really learn is how to ask for that help that they need. Now, you mentioned the fact that you need to be specific, and you do. And you need to let people know that, okay, if you're going to the grocery store, would you just let me know so maybe you could pick up a couple of things that I need because I can't get out of the house. Learning to ask is very difficult for the caregiver. They don't want to let go of doing it themselves. When the time comes, they're just overwhelmed, and it's impossible. It's really a very difficult situation. Learning how to ask and being specific. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, well, that's a mouthful because, you know, especially when family, for some reason, it's easier to deal with strangers than it is to deal with family or mothers and fathers or in-laws, because everybody, and this is true whether you have cancer or whether you have any disease, everybody knows an expert or some guy or some drug or some procedure or some, you know, the latest technology, the latest cutting edge, this or that. And Crystal, have you run into that even with the early diagnosis of your son? And how do we deal with that? How do we deal with all the phone calls from all the concerned people who just have their opinions? And, you know, maybe you've already been there, done that, gone through the process. And at some point, everyone says, you know what, that's it. We're just going to deal with this. We're going to stop looking for the magic drug and the magic cure and the magic this or the magic that.
Well, with my son being Down syndrome, basically, you know, his challenge was he developed a behavioral problem, and where because of his limited vocabulary and his limited verbalization, we've never been really able to pinpoint what triggered it, but he was becoming increasingly violent, and you know, trying to take care of somebody who is unable to take care of themselves and then starts fighting everything you try to do is a much bigger, you know, issue to contend with. And I was trying to get services for him, which were difficult to get because of the fact that he lived in home. In California, this is unlike a lot of the other states, we have a thing called a regional center, which deals with the developmentally delayed population. And they are the resource that we use for getting services. However, there's so many people who try to use their services that they are so impacted that their client loads are huge, and trying to get those services authorized is a long-term process. And my son was going downhill fast. And I finally got to a point where it was like, we need to make a placement, because that was the only way we could accelerate him getting the services that he needed. And but in terms of people having, you know, other alternative treatments and stuff like that, with my brother with his wife going through cancer, yeah, everybody was coming up with this, that, or something else. And there's two biggest criteria when it comes to communicating with the people about your situation. It's number one, you say, I understand you mean well, but there's other things I could use you for other than just give me information, unless you want to research this specific thing for me. You know, give them something specific to research for you.
Good idea.
If they're the type who likes to poke around on things. if somebody offers, and I got to tap back on what we previously talked about when it comes to asking for help. If somebody offers help, don't be afraid to say yes and ask them how they're able to help you, because you don't want to overburden somebody who's offered to help, but you do want to take advantage of what they may be able to do. And they may have something very specific in mind that they think they can help you with, like going and doing the shopping for you. So say, yes, I would love to have your help. How do you think, you know, you'd best be able to serve? You know, what do you feel comfortable with doing for me? And, you know, and then, of course, when you do find somebody who's willing to help, don't overburden them.
Yeah.
You know, you get to a point where you want to be too reliant upon them, and then that burns them out. So, you know, it's walking a tightrope there to some degree. But, you know, to me, communication is the biggest factor in it. You know, talking to the person that you're caring for, you know, letting them know. I mean, yeah, we all understand that when people aren't feeling well, they don't want strangers around. But they also have to realize that you can't do everything for them as much as you'd like to. You cannot. And that they're just going to have to give a little on this. But talk to them about it. You know, don't suddenly bring somebody in and leave them going, you know, feeling like they were completely left out of the decision.
Right, because that's what usually happened to the caregiver. The caregiver came in
and
typically, you know, to a temporary situation. Hey, you know, can you just watch so-and-so for a week or a month? And next, you know, 10 years later, they're still watching so-and-so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the, you know, the biggest thing is to know that whenever you're dealing with somebody that's still cognizant of what's going on, that trying to hide things from them, either about the severity of their situation or about how much stress you're under or anything like that, isn't doing either one of you a service. Because they know that there's challenges that you're facing. They know what their situation is, and that actually can stress them more not having it discussed. My mom's best friend, when she suddenly got ill, and she went to the doctor because she wasn't feeling well, and they immediately admitted her to the hospital, and then 2 days later transferred her to a long-term care facility. She never got to go back home. And let me tell you how much she was stressing about that factor. So I finally stepped in because her daughter wasn't willing to do anything. I said, what do you need me to do? And she says, I need to look at this paperwork. And I said, okay, tell me where to find it. And so I went to her home and I got the paperwork and I brought it to her and I helped her go through it. And it eased her mental burden so much to be able to know, okay, I got that taken care of. Mm-hmm. You know, that she was, it was easier on her to then let go when her body finally said, I'm done. And so that's the biggest thing is that communication with people and not being afraid to ask and not being afraid to say, yes, I need help. You know, you are not Superman, you are not Superwoman, you know, and as much as I have one gentleman who just last week told me that he wished that he was the one who was suffering the ill health instead of his wife. And I said, but then you got to think about the fact that she would be trying to care for you instead of you for her. And he said, oh, my God, I never thought of it that way. He says, and realistically, I would rather be carrying the weight of helping her bathe and helping her dress and helping her toilet than have her trying to carry my weight to do that.
Yeah, good point. You agree, Adrienne? Obviously.
Well, yeah, obviously. But there was the element of people who tell you that they want to help will word something like, let me know if there's anything that I can do. Let me know if I can help. And all of this is stated in a very well-meaning way. Because you haven't learned how to ask, you won't necessarily call that person. It would be something to tell that person as they say that, you could help me with this, and take them up on their offer at the time that they're making the offer. So that offer doesn't just go down the drain and go on the wall in the chart of all the people who say, let me know if there's anything that I can do. There's
the sale. They say if you walk out of the showroom, you've lost the sale.
You've lost the sale. You really have to make that deal when that offer is made. And think, just, you know, be ready and know what you really need help with that somebody else can do. There are certain things that they can't do. There are things that you can have. You have a ready list. If you've been doing it for a long time, you know exactly what you can turn over to somebody else. I mean, for me, being free to take care of the tons of paperwork was a big deal, because I was the only one that I could trust to sort through it and really get it done properly, because I wasn't about to pay an accountant to come in and do it. You know, there are professional services that you can use. It's the day-to-day stuff, that the quantity of things that need to get done. And then the aspect of knowing that this is not going to be a forever kind of thing. Unlike a child and parent, I mean, I knew that there was going to be an end to this. But while it was going on, I wanted to be at my best for them. I needed help to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Krista, what are the types of services that you specifically needed, you know, with your adult special needs child?
Well, and, you know, some of the things that are ongoing with that situation is that he needs some kind of a program during the day to keep him occupied. And finding a good program that suits his capabilities is often a challenge. When it comes to, you know, the actual behavioral care services, because of the violent behavior that he was getting into, I actually talked to law enforcement about taking him in as a 5150 to mental health. Because that was looking to be the only way I was going to get him into the mental health system as a client of Regional Center without Regional Center getting the referral done.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's sometimes you have to work with the system and sometimes you have to work around the system to try and get things accomplished. And it was only when they called and said, oh, we need to do the mid-year review. And I said, well, you're going to have to figure out where you're going to meet him at, because I'm taking him in as a 5150. They said, well, you can't do that. I'm like, yeah, I can. And that's when it was suddenly, okay, we can do an emergency placement. And I'm like, yeah, we wouldn't be in this place if you'd gotten this done 9 months ago. So, you know, I mean, sometimes you have to massage situations. But, you know, I mean, even Adrian was talking about, you know, how dealing with certain things that, yes, only you can deal with, and other things you can delegate to someone, and taking advantage of that offer when it's made, you know, it's really critical to know where you're at all times and be cognizant of what's available, what's not available, and where people can, you know, assist you.
Can I admit my ignorance here and ask that
sure.
You tell me what a 5150, what's a 5150? Being from New York,
it doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Okay, a 5150 is a law enforcement code, meaning somebody who is a danger to themselves or others and needs to have psychiatric evaluation.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Is it a 72 hour evaluation?
If law enforcement takes them in, it is a 72-hour evaluation period. If any other, you know, family member takes them in, it's whatever they determine is necessary up to 72 hours.
So they're really
because
getting a professional evaluation.
Yeah, and an emergency evaluation, essentially.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean if a family member takes
them? Well, if law enforcement takes them in, basically you call the cops to your house and you say, this person is, you know, dangerous and I fear for my safety, their safety. Sometimes that's somebody who's suicidal. Sometimes it's somebody who's combative. And
it could be a dementia patient
will,
as well.
Law enforcement will take them to the mental health facility that's geared to handle those cases. And that's when And like I said, if law enforcement takes them, it's a mandatory 72-hour period. You, as a family member, you can't go after 24 hours and take them out. Whereas if I, as his parent, or if I had a brother or a sister that I took in myself and convinced them to go in, and said, this person needs, you know, is about ready to go off, you need to take care of them, then 24 or 48 hours later, yes, I could go in and take them back out if it was determined that whatever the situation was mitigated by meds or whatever else they had found in their evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Adrian, what's your opinion on, you know, dementia, Alzheimer's, where let's say a spouse is acting violent, which is frequent. You know, that's mm-hmm. certainly one of the or if they're driving and they won't give you the keys and they're just adamant and you can't physically stop that person. Would this be something that someone could do, actually call the police and say, you know, yes, he has dementia, he has Alzheimer's, it's getting worse, he's under doctor's care. But would this work with what Crystal is describing?
I really don't know about calling the police in. I just know that it gets to a point where you do need that professional help. I know with Steve, 2 weeks before his death, the cancer had gone to his brain, and he was exhibiting dementia for the first time. And it was mm-hmm. very radical change, very, very quickly. And I knew that this was not something that I was going to be able to handle. We were in the hospital. It was really end-of-life treatment. He was not in palliative care yet. The doctors had come in to assess him mentally because he had been doing things in the middle of the night that was disturbing the entire floor. Actually, what he did was, it's funny, he called all of his friends at about 2 o'clock in the morning on his cell phone and wow. said, if you ever considered yourself my friend, call the police. I'm being held against my will. And
wow.
if the police receive a call that someone is being held against their will, they must respond. So about 3 or 4 of his friends actually did call the police, and they showed up at the hospital. And that the next day he was being evaluated, and I was told we have to put him in a mental facility. And I was like, this is the one thing that I was not counting on. So
sure.
I really don't know whether or not police could have entered into it. I've seen dementia patients who have become violent. I don't know how the system actually serves them in New York. And it's sad to say that I just see people degenerate.
Yeah.
And the caregivers are just totally depleted by a violent dementia patient.
Yeah, the reason I ask, because sometimes asking your doctor, they won't always give you the right answer because, you know, sometimes it's political. But in my opinion, if you fear for your life or their life, call the police. You know, don't even ask anybody's permission. Would you agree with that, Crystal?
Yeah, I mean, if there's a fear of, you know, anything happening that could severely damage either party,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that was where it got to be with my son and I, was that, I mean, the slightest thing would set him off. And he's a strong guy. And, you know, I mean, he would be kicking, he'd be hitting, you know, just arms and legs going every which direction. And, you know, a 185-pound muscly guy, I mean, because he's short, so that's a lot of muscle packed on that frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's very difficult to control and or to, you know, tame down unless you are a bigger guy, you know, or you have the training to deal with that kind of situation. And at that point, yeah. not only did I not have any training, but I wasn't physically capable of dealing with it. I mean, there was one day we were driving in the car 70 miles an hour on the freeway, and I changed the radio station because we were transitioning areas, and one was getting fuzzy, and it was time to change to the next one. And he mm-hmm. was listening to the song, and he hauled off and hit me while I was driving.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Could have crashed the car, could have killed us both. Thank God that didn't happen. But that was, you know, one of the wake-up calls that I had, that we were getting to a point where I needed to do something drastic because it was yeah. getting beyond what I could contend with.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I have advised people who have gotten into the position where there is a drastic change that social services should be contacted. That yeah. if you don't know what to do and you need direction, just call social services. Somebody there will know what to do. But if they sort of diss you and you don't feel that you've gotten the answer, you have to keep at it and ask to find someone else and use your imagination about yeah. where to go, what to do. I mean, going to the hospital and asking for their social worker, if that's what needs to be done, that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we're up on another break. Let's hold that thought. And when we get back, mm-hmm. you know, we'll talk about, the type of services that we can actually get. And does it cost money? Does it not cost money? What kind of government services, mm-hmm. et cetera? So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities, so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years, after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt, and so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassan.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Crystal Geismer. Did I say that right, Crystal?
Meisner.
Got it.
Meisner.
And just a little correction on that commercial. Apparently, I picked an old one, and that our show is now on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. For those of you, I don't want to confuse you. So, Crystal, what type of question should I ask of a prospective professional caregiver? That's hard to say.
Well, first and foremost, you want to ask about their experience. You want to get references from them, and you want multiple references, and you want to follow up on those references. You want to ask what kind of training they've had. You want to know, first off, what you are looking for in terms of the caregiver, what you need them to do, and then you ask them what they will do or not do, and so that you can align the person you're hiring with the needs you actually have. Again, it's that conversation of getting the information, of, you know, asking the questions, of, you know, understanding specifically what it is that you need help with, and then finding the person that can offer those services, you know, in the manner that you are interested in having them provided. Because if, especially if you're the one footing the bill, you are essentially the employer. Even if they're coming through a service, you are essentially the employer. So you're dictating the terms of how they're going to come in and how they're going to operate.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have some hesitation about having somebody come in and be there when you're not there, and you just want, you know, some extra time, then you let them know, you know, you're going to come in and for the most part, I will be here, you know, but I'm hiring you to do this work. And, you know, that we're not necessarily going to be doing a lot of interacting once you get settled into the job. But that you are here to do that work and take that load off of me. And, you know, so that there's a clear understanding, you know, between yourself and the caregiver of what you want and need and what they're expecting to do.
Yeah, a lot of caregivers aren't even, I'm sorry for interrupting again, but I just want to throw this in.
Right.
A lot of caregivers aren't even aware of what level of care they need. There are so many different kinds of levels. I mean, we already spoke about the volunteer, just someone stopping at the supermarket for me, you know, the, hey, can you do this? Hey, can you come in for 1 hour while I go, you know, have a Starbucks or have a, you know, massage or whatever. And then, you know, there's the kind where they actually come to the house and do housework or whatever and then leave. And then there's the kind where they maybe fix meals, and there's the kind where they actually move in, you know, and are kind of a live-in. And then, of course, there's the kind where you actually need a facility. He can no longer stay in this house. It's just too much of a danger. And let's just talk about, you know, the costs of some of those different kinds of things and how can we get help with these costs? Because some of these costs are prohibitive. I mean, Adrian, you know, so many people need extra care, but there just isn't funds for them. And I've had people on the show who are government people who explain, well, if you qualify, you can get this, and you can get that, and you can get that. Mm-hmm. So who would like to take that topic?
Well, I can jump in.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, I can jump in immediately with the governmental aspect because, yes, if you qualify are the big terminologies. And a lot of the if you qualify is based upon what your assets are. And that's something
that I
would address.
Is it your assets or the care receiver's assets? That's a question.
Well, if it's your spouse, it's usually, well, in California, it's a joint situation. So, you know, it because it's a community property state here, whatever you own, your spouse also owns. So it's looked
sometimes
at jointly in California.
Sometimes it makes sense to get
California.
Divorced then, huh?
Yeah. And but the biggest thing is that, you know, a lot of people have investments. And one thing that they need to look at is whether or not their investments are providing a revenue stream or if it's just something that they're holding on to, hoping to sell for a better price than what they purchased it for. And realistically, what you want to do if your situation is where you've got investments but they're not generating funds that could help pay for the care, then you want to sell them and get them into investments that would generate funds or sell them and utilize the money. You know, I have a real good friend. She and her brother are dealing with caring for their mom. And their parents had a large rental property business. They wound up selling a lot of the properties out of the business in order to put her into a care home because they thought that that was going to be the best option for her and she was agreeable to it. Well, 4 months into being into the care home, she was like, I don't like this. I want to be back in my own home. So they then had to wind up evicting the tenants that had signed a year-long lease in the home that she had been living in and shift everything around and bring her back and then hire professional care because both of them work during the week. And then on the weekends, they would swap out taking care of mom on the weekends. And for a while, it was my friend who was doing it every weekend, and then she had to take a break from it, and her brother had to step in and start doing it every weekend because they could not afford 24/7 care. So, you know, there's – and of course, every state's going to be different as far as what
right.
Governmental agencies exist, you know, but look for anything and everything, you know, whether it's – Office of Aging, whether it's Department of Social Services, you know, churches, nonprofit organizations, just, you know, ask people who they know, what they know, who they know, what they know, and it, go after absolutely everything you can unearth. You know, if your spouse may be in a Social Security issue, which means then there should be some Medicare eligibility. And, you know, sometimes it's having to have the doctors push the Medicare a little bit further down the road to get something more established. So there's a lot that goes into that consideration and a lot of research. And again, that's why I say when somebody says, hey, well, can I help? It's like, yeah, you can do this. You know, if you've got a son or a daughter who maybe can't come and physically help, say, hey, I need you to research the heck out of this, you know, get mm-hmm. all the information you can find on this.
Mm-hmm. Like the Veterans you know? Administration offers a lot of benefits to veterans who
yes.
need to be placed in an assisted living environment. So there's a lot of new mm-hmm. things going on, and if it wasn't available last year, it could be available this year. Anything to add to that, Adrienne?
No, there is help for veteran caregivers at this point in a lot of states because the problem is so prevalent. I've heard that. There are communities within a military setting where the caregivers that are there to support each other and share the knowledge of how to get through all this red tape. I have a cousin right now whose husband is a veteran and is receiving extraordinary care in a Los Angeles veteran facility, services that are superior to services that he received elsewhere. So to get back to this, the services should not be given up on. If you've got this child that's able to help you do the research because you know you're too busy or you can't because there's technical knowledge involved, not everybody is as savvy, you know, with the computer and finding information as some of these kids sure. are. So use them, but tell them, give them direction and tell them don't give up. If the person that you're talking to doesn't know, ask that person who else might know.
Yeah.
Because you can't just let somebody shut the door in your face. You can just
Amen.
keep asking. Okay,
that's
if
right.
you can't do this for me, who do you think I should call now? Like, where should I go next? And
okay,
those people, when you accumulate that information, you can frequently find a way. Sadly, there are a lot of instances where the government is of no use at all unless you're absolutely broke.
Yeah,
but you know. You've bottomed out.
Well, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. In the next couple of minutes, Crystal, would you just share with us your contact information if somebody wanted to contact you and get some more information on your knowledge and experience?
Sure. They can email me at rockcrystalstar dave@gmail.com, or they can call, well, text is actually better, 951-323-6566.
And Adrian, share how someone can contact you as well.
Well, you can contact me at Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org, and I will answer any emails that I get.
All right, and I just want to thank my listening audience again for tuning in today and every Tuesday live at 1 p.m. Pacific time, and don't forget that all our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen on the same day, Health Star, and afterwards, anytime, at the Health Star Worldwide Network link, 24/7. They're also on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, under the Uplifting Interviews tab. They're on iTunes. They're on Stitcher Radio. And we're working to even get them on Blab, if you know what that is. And just a reminder, when you're on my site, don't forget to take the short quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? To assess where you are in the burnout process, and get your free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships and Incredible Value. Why? Because we want to help you survive this thing called caregiving. So until next week on Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process. Goodbye.